Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Blake, who thought he had beaten the buzzer in a game against Notre Dame this season from midcourt. He wants it and he needs it. Nicholas, the senior, with 2 seconds. Here it goes for the win! Yeah! Nicholas has done it! Maryland on to the second round and a most heroic finish.
That was 20 years ago. Last year we celebrated 20 years since the national championship year in 2002. As the defending champs, they were on the ropes. In the final game, by the way, of the first round, it was a late Friday night in Nashville, Tennessee, when Drew Nicholas hit that shot to beat UNC Wilmington. Terps would go on to beat Xavier on the following round and then lost to Michigan State and a crusher in overtime in the Sweet 16. Gary Williams, Hall of Fame basketball coach and the man on the sidelines that night, joins us right now. That was 20 years ago. That really, you know, that Drew Nicholas shot for all of the, you know, highlights and buzzer beaters and thrilling moments in NCAA tournament, that one's always there.
Yeah, that was right in front of our bench. I really had a good look at from the bench on a long shot like that. You can tell if it's online. You can't tell if it's short or long, but you can tell if it's online. And that was right online. And Drew knew it was in, too. After he shot it, when he came down from the jump shot, he was on his way to the locker room as the ball went in the net, which I thought was a little overdone, but you know, it's all right. But he's now scouting for the Denver Nuggets, Drew Nicholas.
That's awesome. He had a phenomenal international career.
He was Player of the Year in Europe 1 year and played for all the big teams like in Greek, Italy. Those guys, when they have a good year, they usually jump like to another country because they get more money. And, you know, Drew, you know, he did a great job with his money. He lives in Miami and living a good life. So I'm very happy for him.
That's awesome. And that game, I'll never forget that. You know, that was the very last game when it finished up of the first round on a late Friday night. I think it ended at after midnight when that shot went through.
It was a very hard year that year after the national championship. We were still, you know, a really good team. We still had Steve Blake, Drew Nicholas, Taj Holden, Ryan Randall from that team. And Nick Caner-Medley had come in as a freshman. You know, we played really well the next game against West and
David, you know, West in
that game and Xavier, and then lost. We missed a jump shot from the top of the circle to beat Michigan State to go to the Elite Eight. So that was a tough one.
It was a good look for Blake. It was his final shot of his career, and I thought that one was going down. And by the way, it would have been, I think, Texas in the Elite Eight with a chance to go back to the Final Four that year. That was a great game. Yeah, really, really, really good team.
So, we played a lot of games at Michigan State in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, so. I know. By the way, they didn't go very well, obviously, and they were all super close. And correct me if I'm wrong, they were all big comebacks from big deficits.
Yeah, we were we beat them in New York and Madison Square Garden 1 year, but we lost the toughest loss I ever had was out west. We lost to them Revis Vasquez had scored 10 points in the last minute and 10 seconds. And Draymond Green hit a jump shot in front of Izzo's bench, Michigan State's bench, when Izzo was trying to call timeout to give them the lead. Vasquez went down, gave us the lead. Then they came down and made a shot for a kid that wasn't supposed to catch the pass that he caught. But the one guy ducked, and the other guy walked in and caught.
Summers, yeah. He ducked. Lucius made it.
Circle.
Well, you've said to me before, that's the toughest loss of your career.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we weren't a great team that year. I had a great player in Gravis Vasquez, but we weren't good enough probably to beat Michigan State, but we had the opportunity to beat them, and that's the way those things go.
Well, I mean, you were the ACC regular season champs, right. And you know, you had a young freshman center who I wish had stayed in school for 4 years, in Jordan Williams. And Eric had a great senior year, Landon Milbourne. That team was such a likable team, and Gravis obviously was a lovable player.
Yeah.
And he put in that game, we've talked about it many times, I think he had 12 of your final 14 points as he tried to will.
We were 15 down in the second half and came back against, you know, Draymond Green, a very good Michigan State team. But, you know, it was a game we could have won. And those games, you see it every year. They come down to one shot a lot of times. And, you know, sometimes those things live with you. If you're a player and you're a competitor, you don't forget that. You know, that stays with you, whether you win or lose. That game stays with you. When the guys came back that were on the championship team, that also played in 2003. They talked about that Michigan State game, about losing that Michigan State game as much as winning the national championship.
Yeah. We're talking to Gary Williams. So did you think that three-pointer from the kid who had scored all those points, Johnson, who ended up with 27 in the game, did you think that was going in at the end? Looked online.
Right. Yeah. It's why not? You know, I mean, it looked good. And, you know, sometimes, you know, shots just don't go in. The player does everything right. He shoots it. He thinks it's going in, and it doesn't go in. You know, it's just a little off. So, you know, those things happen, but you never know. I mean, it's people, if you haven't been part of that, people don't understand the pressure in the NCAA tournament. There's that, unless you're really good, there's that feeling of making the tournament, which is a great feeling. It's unbelievable. That only lasts usually, hopefully, until the first, second practice. But, you know, after that, you get into the tournament, you get a chance to win a game, and you don't win it, it really hurts. And they're the games that stay with you. You know, those games don't go away as time goes by.
All right, so we're talking to Gary Williams. I talked about this game in the first hour. I loved it. It was a brawl. I mean, it was one haymaker after another thrown by each team. What were your takeaways from the Maryland 67-65 win over West Virginia?
Well, I thought, first of all, you know, knowing Bob Huggins a little bit, they were going to come out and play really hard and do whatever they could to win the game. And, you know, watching Maryland this year, the one consistent thing, they've been a little inconsistent. The one consistent thing they always do was show up and play hard and you know, let's go. And those two teams really went at it. It wasn't pretty, but, you know, NCAA tournament games, sometimes they're not, you know, really artistic, but because both teams are tight a little bit at the start of the game, and you know, you got to play your way through that, and then it really gets down to it. When you got two teams that are willing to play really good defense and work really hard, you see a game like Maryland West Virginia, and you know, I thought Maryland won that game, which they haven't been able to do often this year when Young doesn't play great. You know, when he doesn't have a great game, he was okay. He made a couple mistakes at the end, but he was okay. But he wasn't great, but Maryland still won the game. And I think that's a great thing for them, confidence-wise, going into the next game.
Talking about Young, there have been a couple of games here down the stretch where teams are really getting physical with him. Looks like they're really trying to force him right and not let him go get left going downhill. How do you combat that? Because he's too good, and you're not going to be able to beat a team without, like Alabama, without Jameer Young playing much better and scoring. I mean, he had one field goal, was 7 of 8 from the free throw line, but made one shot from the field.
I think that he's got to get out early in transition and get some looks where they don't have a chance to set their defense. And I think against Alabama, that might happen because the way they like to get up and down. Obviously, they're a great team as the number one seed, but at the same time, it might be a little easier for Young early in that game. And so that's what he's got to do. He's got to find that open 15-footer. He's in transition. He's got to be able to take the ball to the basket. You mentioned a good point where teams are forcing him to his right, you know, as a left-hander. That's the first thing you look at in the scouting report. You know, how is he going to his right? And I think he's okay going to his right, but the one thing that takes away, when he gets to his left side, when he can go left and start to penetrate the lane, he's got a great pass that he can throw to the opposite corner. But making him go right, that pass is taken away because most people can't throw the ball that far with their weak hand. And, you know, Young's just like everybody else in that regard. So it'll be interesting to see what Alabama does and see how much – they're willing to open up the court to give Young and the other guys chances to dribble penetrate, because when Merrill can get dribble penetration, that's when they're really good, because they're willing to pass the ball. Guys know how to get open when their man goes to help, and they really do a good job with their offense in those situations.
You and I have talked about Reese going back to the beginning of the year. I mean, the improvement of this individual player has been remarkable this year, and when the big kid for West Virginia went out, he dominated the last 6-7 minutes of that game. Just tell me your thoughts about Juju Reese.
Yeah, I think that's the thing you just mentioned is one of the things underrated about Reese is that he's got pretty good stamina, especially for a big guy. The last parts of games, he's played well this year when he stayed out of foul trouble. And that's been the key all year. When he's not in foul trouble, in the last part of the game, he can freewheel. He can just go and play and not worry about anything. When he gets into foul trouble, like a lot of players, a lot of young players, they really worry about being, you know, protective of getting that fourth foul or whatever in the situation. And I think he is that. And he's a young player. People forget as he matures in the game, those things will go away. And but I think he's really a key, especially against a team you know, like Alabama coming up where they have so many athletes and so many guys that can get above the rim, that type of thing, that he's going to really play a key part in just one of the things he has to do is stay out of foul trouble. But, you know, that's easy for me to say, you know, because it's going to be a game where there's a lot of opportunities. Guys are coming flying to the rim, trying to block shots and, you know, all those things that where he might pick up some cheap fouls.
I don't think that you ever faced a one seed in the second round. I mean, you typically were seeded pretty high in the tournaments, with the exception of that first year when you guys were 10 against St. Louis and beat a 2 in UMass in the second game. But this isn't just the number one seed. This is the number one seed in the tournament, and they're loaded, and Brandon Miller is great, although he's a little bit banged up. He didn't even score in the game yesterday against Corpus Christi. So, you know, how do you get ready after, you know, an exhausting game yesterday? They don't play in Gary until 9:40 tomorrow night, so they've got the most amount of time in recovery of anybody. Yeah. But what do you think of their chances against Bama?
Yeah, I noticed, you know, those times, and obviously having that much recovery time this time of year, you're in great shape if you don't have a serious injury on your team. You're banged up a little bit, but you know, you're used to playing, and you want to play this time of year. You don't look forward to practices. So, you know, they had time last night to go over a lot of things, walk through. Most of the time you get like a ballroom in the hotel you're staying at, and you put down a basket, your managers put tape down, and you walk through stuff that you're going to do against Alabama. And then this morning, whether they want to shoot or not, some teams do, some teams don't. And then you get ready to play. And I think the players are really looking forward to this. It's a great opportunity. Once again, it's a game that's going to be featured. And everybody will get a look at Maryland basketball, that's for sure. And, you know, players are aware of all these things. And, you know, they're going to be fired up and ready to play. Now, when Alabama's on their game, they are really good because they come at you, they come up and down, they'll take shots that sometimes you think they're bad shots, but they make them. But things happen in one game. You know, the ball doesn't always go in. Maryland can get hot. They've proven that over the course of the year. Maryland can beat good teams. They beat Purdue, a number one seed already. And so anything goes tonight. I think the pressure's off, and you just go out and play.
I want to ask you about Virginia real quickly before we get to this break. There's the discussion, you know, yesterday after Tony Bennett's team lost in the first round for the third time in their last four tournaments, you know, losing that lead late to Furman. By the way, did you see the end of that game? I'm assuming you did.
I saw the replay. Yeah, I saw the replay. Guard for Virginia is such a great player. I felt bad for him. I really did.
Yeah, I think he may have thought that if he threw it up in the air, the clock might run out.
But yeah, I think he had the clock wrong. Yeah,
I think he had it a little bit wrong. I mean, there's actual criticism of Tony Bennett. Pat Forty, longtime college basketball writer, wrote that now it's obvious how much of a fluke 2019 was. This guy's won a national championship. He's been to an Elite Eight. He's been to multiple Sweet 16s. And yeah, they're stylistically different than a lot of teams. But what are your thoughts of Tony Bennett, the way they play, and the conversation late yesterday and probably throughout today about him and the prospects for Virginia in the tournament with the way they play?
Well, that's easy. That's an easy cheap shot, really, to take at Tony. In that situation, like, the things you just said about Tony Bennett, people will forget those things real quick in a situation like yesterday. You know, we've all been there. The style of play of Virginia is different. There's no doubt about it. They play different than most teams, especially today. Most teams have gone to a spread offense, high screens, ball screens, things like that, where Tony still runs like a five-man offense, and they really don't look to run in transition. They very rarely ever get a cheap score, which is a hard way to play offensively. That does put players pressure on your players, but they've been successful playing that way. Now, let's not ever get away from that. The thing that does, playing like that, it keeps teams in the game that you're supposed to be better than. When my junior year at Maryland, going way back in the 60s, we played Houston and Elvin Hayes, and we beat Houston down in New Orleans in the old Sugar Bowl basketball tournament. And we didn't have one starter as good as any starters. They had Don Chaney and a couple other guys on that Houston team. We didn't have one starter as good as they were, but the way we played slowed the game down enough where we had a chance to win it at the end, and we did. Now, during that same season, we lost to Navy, who they didn't have a starter as good as anybody on our team, but we kept Navy in the game because of our style of play. We walked the ball up and, run. And then there was no shot clock either, and just run the offense till we got a good look. And so, I've been on both sides of that. And when I coached, I liked up-tempo style and, running, pressing, things like that. But, to say that because this is what the NCAA has done. It's put the spotlight completely on that. Sometimes whatever you do during the season gets overlooked as soon as the NCAA tournament starts. And I think Virginia is a good example of that. Maybe their style isn't great for the NCAA tournament because you catch these teams that are really fired up. They don't really care. A team like Furman walks in here, there was no pressure on them. Nobody thought they were going to win the game. And so, that those things can happen. But Tony Bennett, his body of work at Virginia, there's probably, three or four programs that have done better than them over that course of time.
Yeah. I mean, there are 99% of the programs out there would take Tony Bennett in the results he's had in a second. By the way, December 29th, 1965, Maryland 69, Houston 68. So, Gary, was Elvin Hayes, he had to be a young player, right? Because that famous game against UCLA that they played in the Astrodome was in 68. Was he a freshman?
Freshman couldn't play then. He had to be a sophomore.
He had to be a sophomore, right.
Yeah. And he got into it with Guy Lewis, the famous Houston coach.
Sure.
Guy Lewis took him out of the game. And I think we were down like 5 or 6. And back then, the sub would give either a towel or the warm-up to the player coming in. So as Haynes left the game, he had the warm-up in his hand, and he threw it at Guy Lewis's feet on the way by because he didn't want to come out of the game. He was a little upset. And so Guy Lewis got upset at him and wouldn't put him back in the game. Meanwhile, we get like a 3 or 4 point lead and hold on at the end of that game and win the game. So, and then we beat Dayton with Henry Finkel and Donnie May. It was on that team. That was the Final Four team.
Wow.
The next year. So
well, looking at the Houston team, Don Chaney was on that team too.
Yeah.
And Elvin Hayes averaged, it was his sophomore year, he averaged 27-17.
He caught one of my shots. I thought I had a layup.
Caught it and threw it, or just caught it?
Yeah. No, he kind of caught it. He blocked it, then he got it. You know, it didn't go out of bounds or anything. It was kind of embarrassing. You know, it's like.
By the way, Elvin Hayes, his senior year at Houston, averaged 36.8 points per game, 19 rebounds a game. He is, I've always thought, one of the real underrated great players of all time. Not to mention, he never came out of games. Never missed games, never came out of games as a pro.
He was unbelievable. I mean, people forget, you know, and I understand, time goes by. There's new great players that come along. But, you know, you look at, you know, an Elvin Hayes in college, a Maravich in college, you know, what those guys did. And, you know, it's mind-boggling that they could do what they did.
Enjoy the hoops today. I'll talk to you later. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it.
All right. Gary Williams, everybody. Ben Standing next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.